You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to In Her Shoes. I'm Lindsay Peoples, and I'm editor-in-chief of The Cut. On this show, I get to talk to people that we love and admire, or some that we just find interesting. We'll explore how they found their path and what maybe have gotten in their way and how they brought others along now that they've arrived. Katori Hall has a way of making the most dynamic, interesting characters come to life. And there's been no better display of that than the world she's created on the show P-Valley that's addicting and one of my personal favorite shows to binge. Katori is a master storyteller, from P-Valley's strip club in the Mississippi Delta to Mountaintop, which was based on Martin Luther King, and of course the Tina Turner musical. We got a chance to talk to her about her career, her writing process, and of course what to expect on the next season of the show.
Hey, Lindsay.
Hi. Thank you for doing this.
Oh my God. Thanks for asking.
So I start every show by asking about your literal shoes, since this show is called In Her Shoes, and we got to get our fashion fix in. So tell me about either what shoes you have on right now or your favorite pair of shoes right now.
Child, I ain't got no shoes on right now. I am at home.
I know. Well, we started... that's why I asked both, because it's like either people are home when they're doing these, I'm in the office, but... What are your favorite shoes that you're like, this is the energy that I need when I go into a meeting or when I need to feel good, shoes you wear?
So what's hilarious about me is that I don't care how nothing looks, real talk. I really just go for comfort. So a shoe that is my go-to, just Air Force Ones. I have probably like 20 pair, all different colors. Summer.
I have a few.
Yeah. Just, you know, put them on. It doesn't even matter if it's going with a dress versus jeans. You can dress them up, dress them down, put like little chains on them. But that's the thing, especially when I'm like ripping and running in life.
Yeah,
and on set.
I hear that. Yeah. I hear that. If there were shoes designed for the girls on P-Valley, what do you think the shoes would look like?
So what's interesting is because there are always... in those sky high heels.
Yeah.
I think going in the other direction, like Crocs that have like all kinds of embellishments on them. My mama actually just got into designing embellished Crocs and ordering all kinds of little trinkets and stuff to put on them. So yeah, comfort.
Wow. Okay, and so more figuratively, what would you say it's like in your life to be in your shoes right now?
Wow, to be in my shoes right now, that's a really great question. I am balancing so many different responsibilities, hats, ambitions, dreams, desires, and so it feels like I'm in 10 feet tall platforms trying to balance and walk my way through life. Like I just had a baby. It's a year ago, but just had a baby, you know.
Congratulations.
And she has really kept me sane and insane in the midst of also trying to run a huge show, in the midst of also just parenting the other two kids, you know. It's a lot. But even though I feel like I'm a little high in the sky in my heels right now, I would say this is the most grounded that I've ever felt in a very long time, because I feel like I'm just beginning to learn how to balance my abundance. Yeah, and luckily I don't fall too much.
I love that. Let's go back to the beginning for people. Obviously, so many amazing projects that you've worked on and led. What made you realize that you wanted to make a career out of writing characters and making them come to life?
It kind of happened because I failed a lot at the other things. Like, I wanted to be an actress for a very long time. And I think just innately, I'm a storyteller. So whether it was going to be by, you know, my actual voice using my body or my actual fingers, I was going to figure out a way to tell stories. Mm-hmm. I eventually, once I kind of saw that there wasn't enough for Black women specifically in media and in film and TV, especially, I think that's when I decided to segue,
right,
and really sit down on the that other side of the table at the desk and pull out that computer and create mm-hmm. all the things that I wanted to see and possibly be. But I eventually gave up on my acting career, even though every once in a while I'll pop up on P-Valley. You just gotta be, your eyes gotta be quick enough to see me. But yeah, it gives me such satisfaction to hold space and create and reflect worlds and characters that I haven't seen, family members haven't seen ever,
right,
on TV.
And so after you won Pulitzer, which is so huge, for Hot Winking, did you then feel like, okay, I've always known that I want to do storytelling, now all these opportunities are starting to roll in? Or did you feel like you still had to prove yourself and the stories that you wanted to tell?
You always have to prove yourself. What's so interesting about that award specifically is that I think anyone, particularly in drama, that's kind of like our top award. Like, there may be something mm-hmm. else, but like, if you get the Pulitzer,
no,
that's what I'm saying. It's like, once you get that, yeah. It's really about, can you get another one? Shout out to Lynn Nottage, she got two. And it's like, I'm trying to get on my Lynn Nottage tip, but you know, that may not happen. And one is enough. And so this thing of, were there more opportunities? Not really. And that's interesting, right? As a successful Black writer who does get the top award in their field, it didn't necessarily give me more confidence. I've always kind of had confidence in my own writing and what I have mm-hmm. to say. But I will say it probably made other people more comfortable that they had given me a platform. They were like, because I think initially they were scared. They're like, oh my God, we gave her all this money to do this show. And then it switched to, of course we gave her all this money to do this show. She's a Pulitzer Prize winning writer. Get out of my face, you know?
Right.
So it's like the confidence that other people had in me improved. But I wouldn't necessarily say at this point in time, more doors have been opened.
Right. I mean, you've written a few plays, musicals, obviously Mountaintop, which is based on Dr. King, Tina Turner musical. I saw and loved that. How did you go about the process of writing about real life people as opposed to fictional characters?
It's interesting. I actually have the same approach where I try to put myself in their shoes. With Tina Turner, I literally was able to fly and sit with her and talk about her shoes, talk about her life, talk about all kinds of things beyond the music. And I think it was so important with her specifically to really be in the room with her, because everyone thinks they know her story because of the movie and because she's very and was very transparent about everything that she went through. And so mm-hmm. it still is, right? However, it was interesting to be able to listen to her silences and listen to her answers to questions that were hard to answer. And that was how I was able to, I think, do, I wouldn't necessarily even say a new version of her life, but an articulation of her life that really delved into some things that she was still working through, even at her older age as a woman. The fact that, you know, she was mm-hmm. still trying to make sense of the fact that she had a toxic relationship with her mother. And so mm-hmm. research is just so, you know, central to my writing process. And she's a real person. Now, if it's a fictional person, kind of the same thing where I try to research the world that the person exists in and is trying to conquer. And I literally just sit back and I'm like, if it was me in those shoes, you know, what would I do? What would I say? How would I be? How would I conquer my objectives and then stories kind of just automatically come out of my mind that way.
Do you feel like there's a big difference in writing for plays or writing for TV and in making that transition when you're working in between projects though?
Yes, but I must say each one has taught me to be a better writer. Like each medium had, like for example, I was working on P-Valley at the same time I was working on The Hot Wing King. And something that's very interesting about TV is that you get a lot of notes. You get notes on top of notes to the point where you got to learn how to.
I've heard this. Yeah.
Like from all these executives, executive producers, you know, once actors come in, sometimes the actors want to weigh in with notes. It's just, it's a lot. But instead of being, I don't know, deflated by the notes, I was like, you know what? What are they trying to say? What is not working? And what I put on the page that I can shift so that I can get my intention across better. So I learned how to become a better rewriter of my own material. And I kind of learned that writing is actually rewriting. Like the first draft just ain't going to cut it.
Yeah,
nine times out of 10, really 10 times out of 10. So with Hot Wing King, because I have been given a note to basically tear apart the first like draft of my first season. They were like, I had written four scripts. They were like, you need to start over because something is not working. So I trashed those scripts and started over. Mm-hmm. And so when I approached Hot Wing King, I was so not precious about anything because I knew that I could do another draft and I could probably do it better. And so, yes, they're two completely different mediums, different formats, different styles, different approaches to how characters are laid out. But at the end of the day, the core is a story that has a clear intention. And what do you have to do in order to make your intention as clear as possible? And so I don't think I would have even won the Pulitzer had I not been working on P-Valley, because P-Valley taught me how to be a better writer because it taught me how to have a better process.
I mean, let's talk about P-Valley though, because obviously such an amazing show.
Oh, thank you.
What was it like pitching though? Because I mean, it's a show about a black strip club in the South, and I'm sure people were like, wait, what? Like, what is this?
So pitching was crazy. There were some people who were like, girl, you cannot even come through the dough. We are not hearing this pitch. We are not going to buy it.
I'm sure.
Totally. So I remember going around town. Some people, their eyes would be opened, like really, really wide, because they were titillated, but not for the right reason. I was like, oh, they just want to see some ass. I'm like, this is not the right place. Then other people would be like, a little like, oh my God, no. Like they were clutching their pearls. So I was like, okay, you're not the right place. But then I remember my pitch meeting at Stars, and it's so funny because I was like late. I was like, why am I so late to this damn meeting? But anyway, I digress. And I'm sitting across and I was like, okay, since I'm 20 minutes late, I have to pitch my heart out. And so I just went to this big speech about, we have to humanize these women. This is not something to be titillated by. This is something to be moved by. These women are human beings. They're just like you. They're just like your mother. They're just like your sister. And so I came from such a grounded place, especially because as a Black Southern woman, I have frequented these strip clubs. And by that time, I had, I think, interviewed over 40 women about their lives as dancers all across the nation. Mm-hmm. So I just came from such a well-informed place that they were just like, oh my God, we love this, but you're going to pitch it again. So I remember having to pitch it again to the president of the network at the time, and still same thing, really impassioned and clear plea as to why these women needed to be reflected on TV. And they were like, all right, there you go. We're going to give you the keys to the kingdom and let's go see what you do, right?
I mean, you said though that you knew that this show was going to be successful. Yes. And you told the executives that you knew, you know, you were going to get X amount of people per episode, that it was going to be a hit. How did you know that though internally? Because I'm sure so many people go into those meetings thinking my show is a genius idea. Like what did you feel? I mean, what did you feel about the show that you felt would really resonate with people?
Because I grew up going to strip clubs and I knew that there was like a baked in audience. Like I am well aware how rappers have built whole entire careers off of playing their music in strip clubs. I knew that Black women in those clubs, these dancers are kind of like the A&R of the streets. Like, if they ain't dancing to it, it's probably ain't gonna bop on the radio. So I knew the respect that our culture, you know, gave to these women, you know, most of our culture gives to these women. And I was just like, if I get this opportunity to put this out in the world in a way that is super elevated, and like I said, super grounded at the same time, it's going to be a hit. It has to be, because I just knew,
right,
just by going to strip clubs, just like when you go on a Saturday night, hell, sometimes on a Monday night, and you just see everybody and just the experience of a Black strip club, especially down south, I was like, oh, hell no, there's no way this can't be successful.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
I mean, you talked earlier about balancing abundance, and I know that you wear a lot of hats for P-Valley, being obviously the creative, executive producer, and showrunner. How do you do all of that?
I don't know. I'm still figuring it out.
what did each of those roles entail, to break it down for people also who may not understand the difference between
you know, it's interesting because a lot of times a show will get made and the creator actually does not run the show, mostly because they don't have the experience to run the show. You know, they didn't come up the usual TV writing ladder. But luckily I was given the opportunity to be on my set and make literally every decision at the macro level, like creatively, which is the kind of creator hat, but then on the EP showrunner level, which is I'm day to day on the ground, talking to the grips, talking to the DP, talking to the directors, problem solving. Oh my God, y'all are not gonna make your day. Girl, what we gonna do? How we gonna make our day? Like, just managing souls, managing the operation, looking at budgets, learning how a budget is made, learning how to make a budget that's too small work. All of those things, I kind of learned on the fly. I had no idea how to do it on my first day, which is, I think, sometimes you're like, stars, are y'all okay that y'all like literally put a person in the cockpit who was like, okay, y'all, this is my first time flying. Okay, y'all ready? Did y'all put y'all seatbelts on? Because I didn't, you know? But somehow we landed and we keep on, you know, going up into the sky and landing again. And it's been a beautiful learning experience for me. And I can't wait to go into this third season, a fourth season, a fifth season, as we kind of all grow as a collective and get bigger and better. It's a dream, because I know there's not that many of me and there's not that many opportunities for anybody, don't matter your color or your gender. It's not a lot of showrunner opportunities. So I just feel really, really blessed to be able to do it right now.
I mean, there's also so many. I mean, I feel like everybody always has a favorite character, but we have to talk about Uncle Clifford, who's obviously a queer character in the South, and very hilarious and entertaining. Is there a real life person or personal influence that you referenced in creating a lot of these characters?
Absolutely. Uncle Clifford specifically is a mixture of my mom, my dad, and my real Uncle Clifford. I really wanted to create a character that was feminine and masculine in equal measure. And, you know, those three people in my life specifically both have an amazing amount of strength, an amazing amount of tenderness. You know, the men are the softies of the bunch. And to be able to just, you know, use all of those real life ingredients and just kind of put it in a bowl, mix it, and bake it. And Uncle Clifford pops out into this amazing, beautiful creation that I'm so happy that, you know, people are enjoying, because she is based on people who I love so much in my life. So.
Yeah, I mean, and speaking of Clifford, I think something that this show has done in such a groundbreaking way that a lot of shows haven't is just really showing, I think, a lot of intimacy between queer characters, and especially Black queer characters. Why was that important to you, and what, you know, where did your thinking come from and constantly wanting to create that season after season?
It's interesting because I think when people think of a show that's centered in a strip club, they're like, oh, yeah, we gonna see, you know, sexiness, and maybe we will see some sex, whether it's in the club or outside the club. And for me, I'm like, well, okay, yes, we're going to do that because that's authentic to human nature and also the world. But what I haven't been able to see visually articulated as much is when people are actually intimate, like true intimacy. And true intimacy is not just sex. It's not just a lap dance. It's caring. It's hugging. It's a whisper in your lover's ear. It's, mm-hmm. you know, letting your guard down. And so that to me has been the most radical thing about the show, like that we're doing what I call radical intimacy. And so mm-hmm. obviously the characters, you know, season one, they kind of have to meet and they have the hots for each other and they're, you know, sexy people. So they're going to have the hots for each other. But now we're getting into the season three where these people are naked in a completely different way. They're more vulnerable with each other. They're sharing their past. They're sharing their dreams with each other. And so I think that Black bodies in general in media we're often misrepresented, and to show us loving on each other and being in love with each other, it's just, I think, a really radical depiction that I want to be able to do over and over again in P-Valley.
Also, I mean, I think the dynamic between Mercedes and just seeing the estranged mother-daughter dynamic is something that I think we talk about a lot as Black people, but you don't often see, I think, presented in that way, and just the breakdown of all of those characters. What made you want to explore that and that relationship between mother-daughter and women in dynamics in adulthood?
It's raw and it's real. And I have a lot of friends who have very, very challenging relationships with their mother. I think there's this, you know, this myth of like, oh, Black women, they take care of everybody. They feed everybody. They nurse everybody, baby. They take care of Black superwomen, right? And it's like, sometimes you don't want to do all that. Sometimes.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah.
And that's the humanity of being seen as an actual person, where your mistakes are just as appreciated and explored as, you know, the things that you do right. And so to really show, you know, even though I will say the relationship between Mercedes and Patrice is like high level dysfunction toxicity, but it's drama. We're doing drama. But, you know, you go to the edge to explore something. And it's just a really honest depiction of some people's relationships. And also it kind of plays against this idea that Black women have to be perfect mothers and all women have to be perfect mothers, that there's complexity in our quest through motherhood.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I also have to ask, because we had Meg Thee Stallion on our cover. So what was it like having her portray her own alter ego, Tina Snow? How did that come about?
So we had loved her from jump. I remember flipping through YouTube and saw this gorgeous woman with that quick tongue in front of some little suburban house in Houston. I'm like, who this girl doing this freestyle? We got to find her. Was telling, I think, the executives about her. And I, at that time, I actually, I wanted a kind of posse-esque main title. So I was like, oh, maybe if we got Juicy and Megan and Cardi and all these people on the main title. We ended up just, you know, being able to do one. But the fact that she was always kind of like in the mix, she actually ended up auditioning for the character of Mercedes. And I always credit her with teaching me about the character, because when I saw her audition, I was like, oh my God, Mercedes has to be that woman you cannot take your eyes off of, who's so charismatic, who's so confident and wide in the world. Because that's what Megan was when she was just popping out. So she didn't do it. However, we found Brandy Evans, who I would say, stepped into Mercedes' shoes herself and just filled them. Like, it was a godsend to have someone like Brandi Ebbets who had the experience that she did to play the character. But, you know, Meg, that's our girl. And so when she was able to come for season two, you should have saw me. I was twerking in my office. I was like, oh, we got it. Like, and then my knee gave out because, you know, I don't have the Meg knees. But it was a dream to work with her. I have been, like I said, wanting to work with her from jump.
Yeah.
And so it came true.
We love her.
We love her too. Yeah.
Love. Okay. So before we talk about season three, has there been an episode that is still like the most memorable for you looking back, or that you just felt like was going to really shake up viewers and generate a lot of conversation that you were really excited to come out?
You know, one of the episodes, it's like saying, what's your favorite child? I can't say.
No, I know.
but an episode that I'm so proud of is episode 5 of the second season, the Keyshawn backstory. Something that was unfortunate that happened was that a lot of people blamed her for her own domestic abuse, particularly at the end of season one. And I really felt like it was my responsibility as an artist to provide the why. And the question why is a hard question to answer, but I was like, we really need to allow audiences to understand so they can empathize with her so they won't blame her for her being abused by another man. And so it was such a challenging episode. I think that was one of the times that we got shut down during COVID, just, you know, dealing with the uptick in Georgia. And there was just a challenging time and filming challenging subject matter. But my dear Shannon Thornton, like, she's a beast. She was a beast. I was like, girl, you got your own movie. Like, and go. And she just dug into that and really just, she broke the viewers' hearts. And it was in that moment where I saw less of the blame on Twitter coming towards her way. And a lot of women actually opening up and being like, hey, I've gone through this too. And so there was a lot of difficult conversations that I think were sparked by that particular episode. But I was really, really happy that it finally stopped the blame game a bit, at least in social media land.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so season three. You got to give us something.
I ain't give y'all nothing because these folks have been coming for my ass. I said it was going to be a Mississippi Minute and they was blaming me like, oh, you write slow. Well, let me tell y'all something. I turned in my scripts yesterday and what's today? We on strike, right?
This is true.
So don't blame me as to why y'all ain't got y'all show.
People deserve to be paid. So
pay me what you owe me. Is all I'm gonna say.
Well, then tell us anything that's next for you, or you know, new directing or anything new that's on the horizon. You know, that you can tell me
in general, I just want to direct a whole lot more. I fell in love with it during the second season of Fee Valley. I got an opportunity to direct the season finale last season, and I felt like I'm like, oh my god, this is what I'm supposed to be doing too. So just like. Give me Creed 3. Give me Creed 4. Give me something. I'm ready.
I love. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm such a fan. I like read everything. Yes.
We love you. We stan. And I'm very excited. In Her Shoes is hosted by me, Lindsay Peoples. Our lead producer is Taka Zen. Our engineer is Brandon McFarlane. I'm Lindsay Peoples, and thank you so much for listening.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Cult Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright. exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within art, beats, and lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari, W, and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu.
Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.